Welcome back to another episode of the Maroon Weekly. I'm Jake here in the studio, and I'm joined by
Greg.
It's just the two of us, and we have a number of reports for you today, and so we'll get to that. As we've discussed frequently here on the Weekly, the university is committed to institutional neutrality on political and social issues. But our faculty don't share the same neutrality, and by looking at their political donations, we see a strong ideological bent. Between 2015 and 2023, our faculty donated $2.4 million to Democratic candidates and political action committees, or PACs. In contrast, only $80,000 went to Republican candidates and PACs. That's 97% of donations going to Democrats. This data was analyzed by Austin Steinhardt, a Maroon reporter who is working with Gray City and the data section. It runs counter to the idea that our University of Chicago is a relatively conservative institution, though our peer institutions do, of course, also skew liberal, perhaps even more liberal. For instance, according to the Harvard Crimson, in 2020, 99% of donations around the presidential election went to Joe Biden rather than Donald Trump. The Maroon found that over half of all donations since 2015 went to just the 2020 political cycle, with a major spike after it was clear that Trump would be the nominee. It's clear that faculty felt the stakes were higher in that particular election. Donations for this current cycle, for which Trump will also be on the ballot, have not kept pace, although nationally it is expected that this election cycle will be the most expensive of all time, with a projected $10 billion in political expenditures per ad impact. More information can be found on the Maroon's website, where Austin did a really great job of laying out the data he found with some fetching graphics.
You know, admittedly, I don't find this very surprising. I think the university does a good job of putting up this appearance, right, that, you know, we're a bastion of free expression and whatnot. But I mean, I guess in saying that, I think it's possible that, you know, we have a biased faculty, but also a faculty that, you know, holds these, you know, that believes fully in the Chicago principles. So that's to say, I don't think the, you know, bias of the faculty is indicative of sort of the political climate on campus, if that makes sense. How do you feel about that?
I mean, I definitely think the political environment on campus skews liberal, much less so than peer institutions, for sure, to a greater degree than even like this, you know, 97% versus 99% would indicate. I think the dedication to the Chicago principles will vary across the faculty. I think that, I don't know, based on what I've seen, it seems like faculty are generally pretty happy about it right now, as we see what happens at other universities that don't have the same, you know, commitment to free expression. You look at what's happening at Harvard, whatever. But I think we do a good job of, I think the university does do a pretty good job of, like, being committed to free expression, empowering people to feel how they will. It just so happens that our faculty very much skew liberal. But I don't think that that has like a deafening effect on campus discourse, like you might see at other schools.
I agree, yeah.
Now, a message from our sponsors. The legendary Steppenwolf Theater invites you to see Purpose, a spirited, funny, and epic drama about an esteemed Black Chicago family of civil rights leaders, pastors, and congressmen. But like all families, there are cracks and secrets just under the surface. Don't miss the world premiere of Purpose by Brandon Jacob Jenkins, directed by Tony Award winner Felicia Rashad and performed by a cast of all-star artists. Purpose is on stage now through April 21st. Access complimentary student tickets for performances March 19th through 24th with code UFC. Can't make those dates? $15 student tickets are available for the entire run with code STUDENT15 at checkout on steppenwolf.org.
All right.
Next, we'll go to Greg,
yes,
who has a report on the cross-country program.
Yes. All right. So students on the UChicago's women's cross-country team are speaking up about the lack of support and inclusivity in the locker room. As both the men's and women's teams begin spearheading on increasing amount of DEI programming, they approach a pivotal crossroads. Following the inclusion, the institution rather, of DEI programming in team spaces last year, some members of the cross-country team have spoken out about pushback to the programming, inappropriate comments made by others, and a persistent and unsupportive locker room culture. Monica Ruiz House, a fourth year on the women's team, who helped spearheading DEI programming for the men's and women's teams, told the Maroon that students of color on both teams began hosting small spaces for themselves in 2021 to speak about their experiences. Since then, she has seen a slow shift in the culture of the cross-country team as the teams look to become a more inclusive space. An anonymous source similarly spoke of a culture in the women's locker room that could feel unwelcoming to people of color. A different source said that they too often felt unsupported as a person of color on the women's team. And there's a quote that says, "I guess I never really thought it was a problem before coming to college. And then I just remember there was this one time me and some of my other POC teammates, we just had a little heart-to-heart. And we're like, oh my God, we all feel this way. And then we're all just crying in the locker room." And she told this to the Maroon. Now, because of such a history, the cross-country team looked to prioritize conversations about race and class in 2023. While many members of the cross-country team quickly embraced this new philosophy, there has also been pushback. During one DEI event, the cross-country teams hosted a shoe drive for migrants who had recently crossed the Mexico-US border in collaboration with the Arizonian advocacy group No More Deaths. Not all students were in favor of the initiative. An anonymous source on the team stated that they were taken aback by snide comments from members of the team regarding this initiative. And a more serious example of a culture issue on the cross-country team arose last October when second-year Nora Holmes dropped out of the Augusta Invitational and removed herself from the team for about 2 weeks following offensive remarks made in a team group chats regarding Hamas's attack on Israel on October 7th. Now, there's a lot more to this. This is a very divisive story. And so I encourage you all to read the full story up on the Maroons website by our head sports editor, Finn Hartnett.
I thought it was a really wonderful article. Finn did a good job.
All right. So I have some tea on this. So I live I shouldn't say what dorm I live in, but I live with in my house with somebody who's on one of the teams. And she knows one of the sources in this article. I won't mention them by name. And apparently, now this, allegedly, I'm just getting this from them. So this person I live with knows one of the sources, and that source told her that she exaggerated some of the claims. And she did that because she thinks that this article will, she did this for personal gain, right? Because she thinks by making these allegations, through such advocacy, that she'll be better positioned for a scholarship.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So it's I don't know if I said that, very well, but that's what I heard. I don't know how true it is.
I figured you were going to say that she wanted to spur change in the program,
nope.
Which you probably still shouldn't exaggerate, but that's more excusable to me.
Seriously, it was... I still can't believe I heard it.
Yeah, but it also doesn't even seem accurate. I don't know that any job will look at this as like major groundbreaking activism. That's unfortunate. That's really unfortunate.
Yeah. But Jake, you said that you saw some discussion on this on SideChat. What was that about?
Yes, there was some discourse on SideChat. One detail that is in the article is that the men's team goes on an annual run to O Block, which is sort of a famous, dangerous housing project less than a mile away from my former dorm in South. One of the sources in the article described that as, I believe, a tendentious form of tourism, fetishizing the crime on the South side, which it does sort of have a strange relationship with the neighborhood, but people on SideChat seem to find that story funny and were reflecting on the stuff that was in the article in terms of the habits of specifically the men's cross-country team.
Mm-hmm. Now, I guess just reflecting on the article itself and the allegations made, I think it's unfortunate that, again, we don't know if these allegations are true, but I think it's unfortunate that it's, how can I phrase this? It seems like you have, on the one hand, DEI, and you have allegations of discrimination, right? You have I view DEI policies as political. I think you can sort of decouple the two. You can, advocate against or call out discrimination without politicizing it. And I think that's part of why this is so divisive, because you have, you've had in recent months, especially with Israel Hamas, a lot of discussion over DEI and its, implementation in higher ed. And so, You know, I don't mean to trivialize the concerns that are raised here about sexism and whatnot, but I think like the prospect or just the idea that some of these allegations are being exaggerated or just flat out fabricated, I think that's really unfortunate. And I think it's indicative to me of one of the shortcoming or like the, yeah, I guess the shortcomings that DEI has. It's that, okay, I don't want to get into this too much, but yeah, I think this warrants like more discussion.
Well, as I see it for this, there are two separate issues. There's the question of the veracity of the allegations made.
Right.
You know, if people were genuinely like distressed by the culture there, if that story that, you know, people came together and they were crying in the locker room about their experiences, if that's true, that's something that should be dealt with. Like, you shouldn't have people feeling like that because of cultural insensitivities on a program. If that's like a genuine feeling that someone has, that should be addressed in one way or another. So if you take that at face value, then something should be changed. I'm glad this article is shining a light on the issues there. If it's not true, then it's really unfortunate to see people like weaponize these, you know, maybe minor insensitivities that didn't have a super personal impact on a person in order to get like career gain, as you said, as you've heard from this source. Hard to know exactly what the true story is there. It's unfortunate that this may be kind of false. All right, next we'll go back to me for another update on the university's finances. The day after that town hall that we covered on the last episode, a couple of Maroon reporters sat down with the university's chief financial officer, Ivan Samstein, and our provost, Catherine Baker. Baker says that the university's financial plan involves slowing the growth of spending and increasing the growth of revenue. They expect revenue growth to happen more slowly, and overall they are targeting 2028 as the year in which revenues and costs will be equalized. A couple of opportunities for revenue growth that came up during the interview are expanding the university's summer offerings and offering more five-year joint degree programs, like a 4+1 master's in management or a master's in finance. In terms of slowing the growth of spending, there were less specific tactics outlined. There is a staff hiring freeze, but they emphasized that it has no impact on faculty, just staff. And they said that there are no plans to cut the UCPD budget. This report is based on an interview conducted by Eric Fain and Nikhil Jaiswal. For more details, including Baker's response to a question about changing U.S. news rankings and thoughts on the university's credit rating, you can find the article on the Maroons website. For a report from Greg on a student's perspective on this debate,
yeah, so Noah Glasgow, head arts editor for The Maroon, published a response to the Clifford Ando debate and over university finances. So this is related to Jake's article. Now, for context, classics professor and whistleblower Clifford Ando submitted a response to former Dean John Boyer's letter to The Maroon, which was published in December, where Ando claims that most of what Boyer wrote in his article did not address the specific concerns that Ando had published. I'm sure you all, you know, are familiar with this story. So essentially what Noah argues is that the university's pursuit of expansion has come at the expense of its intellectual culture and distinctiveness. And he also laments the loss of the university's traditional values and its assimilation into more mainstream elite universities. And as part of this, he asserts that the undergraduate education especially has been instrumentalized to fuel the university's growth and status, which has resulted in an erosion of the university's core values. And also that despite the looming economic crisis, that he believes there is room for the university administration to change course and prioritize the distinctiveness of the college experience. Now, admittedly, I don't think I did this article justice. I'm wary of summarizing viewpoints pieces just because I don't want to distort the author's opinion. So I encourage you to, or listeners, to read this full story up on the Maroon's website.
I read this piece before it was published in the Maroon. Noah is my roommate, and so I looked over it, gave him, I don't know, some tips, but it's very much his piece. He did a wonderful job. There's the question of, like, you know, as we... what do we want to be? There's a question of what does the university want to be? They spent all this money to have these peer institutions, to build these, you know, big dorms, have everyone on campus, build you know, a nice computer science library and make Booth all fancy and all these things. It seems like we're going to have to, you know, pay that back and make these cuts and do things that maybe run counter to the university's ideals, like what Samstein was saying, Samstein and Baker, in that interview about areas for revenue growth. They were looking at master's programs in management and finance. Those sorts of pre-professional programs are not really supposed to be at the heart of what UChicago is, but that's what they're driven to do because of these, you know, financial concerns, which is only something we have to pay attention to in this way because of this aggressive pattern of investment. But yeah, this is where we are now. I hope the university is able to maintain its particular character. How do you feel, Greg?
Yeah, I mean, I'm ambivalent towards it. On the one hand, I don't want the university to go bankrupt, obviously. I don't think the situation is that dire. At the same time, I think, like Noah, I'm concerned that the university is sacrificing its core values, in this aggressive pursuit of money. Admittedly, I don't think I've seen evidence of that happening, at least, that's affected my college experience. Have you, Jake? I'm trying to think of...
I don't know. The thing that comes to mind is they sort of slashed a lot of the budgets of, like, the coalition of academic teams, like mock trial and stuff like that. I had left mock trial, but that affected, you know, the ability of teams to, like, go to tournaments and stuff. I imagine that a lot of these changes will be seen further down the line. Yeah. It's only now that the university is, like, publicly acknowledging that it will need to, you know, cut costs in this way or slow the growth of costs.
Yeah. But you also saw it with the advent of the business economics major. So the writing has been on the wall for, I think, a while now.
Yeah, I don't know that I can ascribe that just to financial squeeze.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I think it's more indicative of, like, the university straying from its values.
Yes.
And I think a fair question to ask is whether the financial situation will hasten that or exacerbate it.
It looks like, it will.
Yeah.
A lot of the things that the university does are sort of luxuries, right? I mean, everything's a luxury. And you have to cut back on programs that maybe aren't as financially remunerative for the university. And those are often the ones that are the most, like, intellectual, theoretical, very UChicago.
We're back with another message from Steppenwolf. I just wanted to remind you guys that you'd be welcome to go see Purpose, that same spirited, funny, and epic drama about an esteemed Black Chicago family of civil rights leaders, pastors, and congressmen that has cracks and secrets just under the surface. The world premiere of Purpose is by Brandon Jacob Jenkins and directed by Tony Award winner Felicia Rashad. It will be performed by that cast of all-star artists on stage now through April 28th. Last time I said April 21st, but as it just so happens, the run has been extended. It's been so successful so far that they're extending the run through the 28th, and complimentary student tickets are available for you March 19th through 24th with code UofC. And once again, if you can't make those dates, $15 student tickets are available for the whole run. That's through April 28th with code STUDENT15 at checkout on steppenwolf.org. And now we'll resume our conversation about the university's finances.
I guess another question I have is, do you think the university can have it both ways? Do you think it can aspire to be like Princeton, Harvard, whatever, and also maintain its distinctive culture?
Yes, I think it's possible, but I think it requires a groundswell of, like, financial support that it doesn't necessarily have. And it was acting as if it did have that, but now, like, you know, if there'd been more incremental change, they hadn't been so aggressive in building dorm buildings and all that, then maybe we could get there. Right now, we're not moving in that direction. Maybe someday down the line, the financial situation will improve and they'll be able to get there. But I think it's probably more likely that the university continues to lean into the pre-professional ethos that we've seen under, say, Nondorf, of accepting more of a certain kind of student, having the business economics major, catering more to a different crowd than the people who were at the university, say, 30 years ago, when we had a much higher acceptance rate But we're still a very academically rigorous, serious institution. I think that's our episode for today. It's been fun to be here in the studio with you, Greg, just the two of us. Once again, I'm Jake.
I'm Greg.
We'll see you next week.